What's up, ghoul kids? Welcome back to another episode of the Ghoulish Gallery with your hosts, me, Tasha, and poor Journey, who is currently cowering underneath the desk because of a thunderstorm. So we've got like some cool atmosphere mood music, assuming it doesn't just kick us out of this today. Each week, of course, I have a guest from a different location here to tell us about local spooks, haunted places, cryptids, urban legends, whatever fun stories they have for us. And this week is Central and Northern California with horror author Francesca Maria. Thank you for coming on. I'm sorry it took forever. It's been like months and months, and I very much appreciate your patience, and I'm super excited to hear what we've got in California.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here, and I can't wait to share all my spooky tales from Northern California.
Yes. I get like extra excited about ones from places that I actually lived. So I spent about 2 years down in Orange County. So it's kind of the opposite end of the state, but I drove up through some of there. So yeah, it's always, once you've actually been to some of these places, it just adds like a different little twist to it, and getting to add a little bit. I wish I'd gone to the Winchester House when I was out there. That makes me sad.
Oh, that's on my list. That's on my list.
You go.
Awesome.
You have to tell me, because I wanted to so badly, but it was like a spur of the moment trip, and we didn't give ourselves time to actually like get out and do things. So we regretted that later on, but it was still nice to get up through there and see how beautiful it is.
Yeah, I've been there several times. It's on my list to talk about today, actually.
Yes, fantastic. All right. So you write horror. Have you always kind of leaned into writing as a creative outlet, and just kind of horror worked its way in there? Or were you a horror fan first? How did all of that kind of start for you?
Sure. Yeah. So the first thing I wrote was a haunted house story at the age of 6. I wrote about a group of kids that ran into a haunted house at the end of their cul-de-sac and what that was like. And so from a very, very early age, I've always been drawn to and a fan of the horror genre.
That's fantastic. I have one from like second grade that I wrote. We had a real problem with bats in the neighborhood. So the guys all went around and fixed the holes in the house, but they did it during the day. So there were like 4 or 5 houses where as soon as night hit and the bats tried to get out, they couldn't get out because the holes had been sealed up where they were getting in along the roofs. So my mom was she was at the time that it happened, I was about 4. My mom was very pregnant with my brother. So she had like slid me under the bed and like draped a blanket over herself next to it. And we were just kind of hanging out while the guys went around trying to catch all the bats that were loose in these houses. So I was like, I'm going to write a story about this.
Oh my God, that's crazy.
So,
as you should. That
right.
Is correct.
I know. I wish I'd still written it. Such a good outlet.
Yeah, I wish I found mine too. It's lost to the ages, my story too. I don't know what happened to it. But my love of horror stemmed from growing up in a legit haunted house. I have 4 older siblings, so we had all kinds of horrible, spooky stuff happen in this house. We had lights going on and off. We had the dreaded attic upstairs. So half of the house upstairs was unfinished, and it bordered my sister's room. And there was just a little tiny cork board that separated my sister's bedroom from this like unfinished attic where we would just put like old games and toys and like, you know, Christmas decorations and stuff. There's nothing in there. But we would always, always hear footsteps up and down, you know, the attic. And there's no floor. There was just like, you know, the, you know, particle board stuff. So, you know, you couldn't walk up there. So we'd have all kinds of scary footsteps. We had our dogs, you know, sitting at the foot of the stairs, looking up towards the attic, barking at things that weren't there. I had this real bad habit. I have it to this day, actually, of the closet doors had to be completely closed, because we had, you know, the 3 big closet doors that had rollers on them. And so they'd overlap. So before bed, I had to make sure that there was no black, like the doors were completely closed, because inevitably throughout the night, the doors would open and I would see like and hear things coming out from inside the closet doors. It scared the crap out of me. So to this day, like if I can avoid closet doors, if I have them, I'll take them off their hinges. Like I have a whole thing about closet doors.
Gosh. Yeah, I can see where that's something that would kind of scare
terrifying.
You.
Yeah, a little bit. And then, you know, another quick story about the house I grew up in was,
yeah,
it would always trap me in the bathroom. And for whatever reason, you know, when I'm vulnerable, ooh, there's a little lightning there, vulnerable, yeah, and naked and by myself, and I was really little, like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, the bathroom door would always jam shut. And it wasn't, you know, swelling because of the hinges, because of the moisture. Literally the locks on the doors would not open, to the point where my dad would have to go get a screwdriver and like take off, you know, the hinges and like literally take the door apart so like I could get out. And that happened not once, not twice, not three times, but at least half a dozen or more times when I was little. Different locks every time. My dad couldn't figure out what was going on. And the whole time I'm in the bathroom, you know, naked towel, little kid, I could feel this horrific presence breathing down my neck, literally on my back. And it felt really creepy. It felt really pervy. It felt really just gross. And I just could not wait to get out of there. So again, bathroom doors and closet doors. If I'm in a public place, obviously I'm going to close the bathroom door, but yeah, at home, the bathroom doors remain open.
Oh my goodness. I don't know that I would be a functional human being after that. So kudos to you, because that struggle would be so real. My little sister, there's actually 19 years between us. She will be 16 next week. And all of a sudden at school, when she was in kindergarten, she just randomly was coming home and she would have been having accidents at school. And they couldn't figure out for the longest time what happened. And how they have, like with the younger classrooms, they have the single stall bathroom in the classroom. She was in there one time, they finally figured out, during a fire alarm. So that alarm went off as she was, and she was the tiniest little thing. So she's in this bathroom and there's this crazy loud alarm, and she got to where she refused to go into the bathroom because she was afraid that the alarm was going to go off again. So they finally sorted out what it was and had to like escort her, you know, anytime she had to go down the hall to like the normal several stall bathroom. Aww. And everything. And she's still like, this child is so a child, she's gonna be 16, but she's so specific about bathroom situations. And you know, she loves like big dark shower curtains so that she feels like closed off and kind of protected in the shower. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this kid, like, when things happen at such a young age, it's
terrifying.
It's a wonder to see what some of us work through later on and what just kind of sticks with you forever.
Yeah, we become horror writers is what happens,
right?
We take that kind. We take that fear, right? We take that fear and we channel it into our work.
Absolutely.
Kind of process it through.
I've always like had issues with nightmares and stuff like that. Like my thing is I can't sleep with my back to the door. Whether I have the bedroom door open, closed, whatever, I can't have my back to it. So
same.
Surprisingly, once I started dabbling more into writing my own stuff, the nightmares kind of eased up for a bit. You know, most people are like, oh, well, it's the horror that gives you nightmares. But like, no, it's actually kind of cathartic to get it out there and not have it just like festering in your mind and, you know, put it out there for other people to read and enjoy. So
that's right. I got asked recently at a I got asked recently at a convention, like, why do you write horror? What's wrong with you? Are you like a serial killer in disguise? Like, there's something wrong. You're broken to write horror. And I thought about it, and the response that came out, I'm like, wow, that's pretty profound. What I said was, growing up in a haunted house, I was powerless. I didn't have any control over what was happening to me, and I was terrorized. As a horror writer, I'm now in control. I'm the one that controls the outcome. I'm the one that controls the boogeyman. I'm the one that controls everything. And it's a way for me taking back that power that was lost when I was a kid in that haunted house.
That is like the perfect answer. And it's funny because pretty much everybody that I've met in the horror community has been like the nicest, most supportive, accepting people I know. So it's like, really, what's wrong with you that you don't write horror?
Well, it's because we work out our shit in our work so that we are then a lot more well-adjusted people.
Right. And we understand that everybody else is doing the same thing. Like everybody's exercising their demons together and getting it out there. This poor baby, I swear.
Exactly.
It's
Aww.
so terrible. Life is so hard. The first time we had a thunderstorm after I got him. So when I adopted him, he was 76 pounds and he is now filled out and healthier and 92 pounds. But even at
Oh,
76,
wow.
yeah, he's a Great Dane mix, so he's a big boy. But I didn't know that he was afraid of storms until he crawled up onto my chest while I was laying down and was like sitting there shaking, and I was like on the verge of like
Oh,
suffocating, but
no.
felt so bad for him. So now sometimes we
Oh,
have to
poor
break out
baby.
Benadryl. Yeah, he's like the biggest chicken I've ever seen in my life, but he's so sweet, so it's worth
Aww.
it.
We
Um,
love our
so
fur
man, I
babies.
feel like we could do like a whole episode about your childhood house because now I want to know like all the things.
It's awful. It's awful. Yeah, I've written a lot about it and I've drawn a lot of inspiration from it over the years that you can see in different things that I've written the last few years.
Yeah, oh, excuse you. Yeah, I'll definitely be picking some of that. I've been trying to read before I have people on. I've tried to read something that everybody has written, but on top of the book reviews and everything, as I go along, sometimes the TBR list that just keeps climbing and climbing and climbing and
Yes, gigantic.
yeah,
Yes,
you get there
I've
eventually.
got one of those.
So
Yeah, I
yeah.
got one of those too.
Oh my gosh. It felt a little better when I sat down at the end of the year and actually started plugging in the things on Goodreads that I had actually gotten to. So it brought it down a little bit, but I think it's still like 400 some books. So
Oh my God, good for you. That's incredible.
is, but I feel like, and so many of my friends have work coming out like that just came out or will be this year. And I was like, man, I'm gonna have to win the lottery so that I don't have to work anymore and can just kind of hang out and read and just enjoy that instead. So,
That
you
sounds glorious.
doesn't it? Ugh, hook me up. So you grew up in Northern and live in Central now?
That's right. Yeah. So I am third generation Californian on my dad's side, second on my mom's side, which is, I only say that because no one's from California. Everyone moves here, but I am actually a California native. And so I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, North Bay, West Bay, East Bay, South Bay, and now I've moved a little bit further south to what's called Central California into the Monterey area. So I've got a lot of tales about the area I grew up in, more in the East Bay. There's a ton of stuff that we could talk about for San Francisco. That should be, I think, its own show. And I would recommend you hook up my friend Lauren Rhodes about San Francisco for folklore. Because what I wanted to talk about is the little lesser known stuff in the East Bay, in the South Bay, North Bay, West Bay of the Bay Area for San Francisco.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I grew up in a little town called Pinole, which is about, let's see, 40 miles east of San Francisco on the San Pablo Bay, near Richmond, where the refineries are. And Benicia and Hercules and all those places. And so It's a very small urban town. And just up the road is this kind of infamous stretch of road called Highway 4, which we would call the Dead Man's Curve or the Dead Man's Road. And it's notorious for being just super dangerous. It's curvy, it doesn't have a lot of lights. There's a big stretch of it that is just two lanes. And there's been, I was just looking at some research for our podcast today, and there's 17 deaths from 13 accidents in 2022 alone,
Oh,
which
goodness.
makes it, one of the most fatal stretches of road in California. And the odd thing about these accidents is that a lot of them are solo drivers. So like motorcycles just kind of going off the road, people just hitting, things that aren't there. A lot of people, the ones where there are multiple collisions, multiple cars, people kind of go into the wrong lane because it's so dark, you can't tell which lane is your lane. And they start driving in the wrong direction. And so the legend goes, you should never ever stop on that road. And this is again 70s and 80s when there's no cell phone or no cell phone service, right? And so if you stopped in this stretch of road, you were pretty much screwed because there's no gas stations around, no houses around, it's totally rural. You are just bummed if you get stuck
Oh
there.
no.
But the legend goes, right? Don't ever stop because you might get a hitchhiker from one of those. I'm doing air quotes for the people on the podcast. You might get a ghostly hitchhiker that sits in your back seat and you see them in your rearview mirror. By the time you cross a certain stretch of Highway 4, they're not there anymore. And so there's kind of this hitchhiking ghost a la Disneyland that is actually a real urban legend where I grew up near. It's Hercules and kind of Pittsburgh area in California.
I would definitely wreck my car if I were to look up in my rearview mirror and there was something there. So
Terrifying, right?
that absolutely. And I can only think because we had when I drove up through there, we wanted to take PCH the whole way. But it was in 20, it was the beginning of 2017. And there were all the mudslides and everything along the way, and portions of it were actually closed. But there was a stretch we went to Glass Beach, Fort Bragg area, and we were coming back down to San Francisco. And my dumbass had forgotten to take off the GPS that I had it directing us away from toll roads. And of course, the Golden Gate Bridge is toll. So it had us taking these crazy through the middle of nowhere back roads to get from PCH back into civilization. And there were several points during that trip, like after dark, where we were like, this is going to be where we die. So to turn
Clearly.
around and add ghosts into like, the switchback curves and just the mental image of that terrain and then turning around and looking in the rearview mirror, like I can absolutely understand car wrecks.
Well, and a lot of people think of California and they think of San Francisco and LA. It's just like vastly populated. The majority of the state is rural and there's not a lot of inhabitants. I mean, it's one of the biggest states we have. And so a lot of area that's undeveloped and tons of forest. We've got the Sierra Nevadas. And so there's a lot of areas that are completely desolate in California, especially in the Bay Area still.
Yeah, it was very eye-opening taking that trip because I was excited to go to California and do all these things, and then I got to California and couldn't afford to do all those things because I totally underestimated cost of living. So I had just stayed like hiking in my, I say, small area of like Orange County. But as soon as we hit like some of Central California, and there were actually things that were green. And like these gorgeous rolling hills that looked like they should be in, a magazine for Ireland or something like that. It was crazy just to see how how different California is from one end to the other.
100%. It's like its own, like we've got two states, really three states, you know, Northern California, Central, and then Southern, and they're all very distinctly different. Yeah, I
Yeah,
agree.
I definitely understand that. Like, even just visually, aside from kind of culturally too, with the way things kind of sort themselves out. But yeah, it's a crazy state all on its own for sure.
One other very local legend, which as I've gotten older, realized is kind of an urban myth that is pervasive across the country. I heard it from my sister, who heard it from a friend. The local mall that we had was Hilltop Mall. God rest it's you know, it's RIP. Unfortunately, Hilltop Mall is no longer with us, but it was
Oh.
one of those local hangouts that all of us kids would go to all the time. It was vast and it was gigantic. Big parking garages, big parking lots, et cetera. So the story as it was told to me is that my sister's friend worked at like Macy's or something, and she would went to work, and there is this little old lady hanging out in the parking lot just asking for rides. And she's like, you know, I can't, I have to go into work, I can't help you. She does her shift. It's a night shift, of course, because things always happen at night.
Always.
She comes out of work. She goes to the right. She goes to the parking garage, and she sees a little lady in. This time, the little old lady has gotten into the back seat of her car, and she looks in the rearview mirror, and she sees, you know, little lady, glasses, white hair. It's like, please take me home. I have to go home. Please, can you please give me a ride home? I'm desperate. I can't be out here anymore. I need to go home. And she's like, yeah, no, get out of my car. She goes and gets security, and the security comes and gets this little old lady out of the car. Come to find out, it's not a little old lady. It's a dude in a wig sitting on an axe.
Nuh-uh.
And that story scared, I swear to God. So that story scared me to death. To this point, I'm 49 now. I still look in the back seat of my car before I get in it.
Oh my gosh.
Terrifying.
Oh, I am also like a huge true
Terrifying.
crime fan. So like combining the two of those, that is horrifying. Oh my gosh.
Horrifying.
Because you know
And
there's gonna
just
be
real enough that it could be plausible.
And there's gonna be still out there somewhere a couple of good Samaritans are gonna be like, okay, you know, super uncomfortable, but feel bad and be willing to oof. One of the podcasts I'm way behind on it, but it's called My Favorite Murder. And one of the sayings that they came up with from it is fuck politeness. Because there are so many times where people just trying to be polite and just trying to be nice end up murdered or, you know, close to it because they felt like they had to be nice. So that is like one of my favorite sayings now with things. Because there's that line where you're not being an asshole if you're just like looking out for, you know, your own life and your own safety. Oh.
That's how Ted Bundy got his victims, right? He had like a fake past
Yes.
trying to move things into his car, and he asked women, "Oh, can you help me just lift this into my car?" Yeah, no. The answer is no.
No. Sorry, dude. You shouldn't have come out here to begin with if you couldn't have handled that on your own.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh. Oh my gosh, that is, yeah, that's horrifying.
And you know, we don't have a ton of cryptids in quantity in California. However, we do have the king of all cryptids, Bigfoot, Sasquatch, right?
That Pacific
So we
Northwest.
don't, and it's not in the Bay Area, but that's right, Pacific Northwest, not too far from the Sierras. I have one story that I can share. We would always go camping as kids for the summer, and we went up to this place called Higham Palm, which is kind of north and almost towards the Oregon border. And I there's a lot of bats, and it was really creepy and humid out and summertime and just kind of miserable. And I remember my brothers and sisters teasing me, saying, like, don't go into the forest because there's Sasquatch. So they're going to come and they're going to eat you. They eat little kids, is what I was told. And so I was always had a fear of the forest, the dense, Sierra Nevada forest because, of Sasquatch. And I do remember there being bats at night and hearing some weird calls at night that my dad's like, let's just go in the cabin now, kids. Let's not be outside anymore. So who knows if that was Sasquatch or not, but I was terrified of Bigfoot from that moment on.
Oh yeah. Well, and especially as a kid, when you see the adults kind of reacting that way, it's like, oh, you maybe this is something I really do need to be worried about.
Yeah,
Oh my gosh.
terrifying.
Well, it's good that you guys
Terrifying.
had a
So
cabin and weren't out there in a tent, because oof.
there was a point in my childhood, my mom said, no more like porta potties. I'm doing flush toilets or I'm not going at all. So thank God for mom.
No kidding. I will like give me a Depends before I have to use a porta potty. Like I just can't even fathom. I mean, I worked in healthcare for a while and I'm in law enforcement now, but just that time in healthcare was enough to make me like super OCD about some things, and that's one that nope.
Hard pass, hard pass on that.
Especially here in the South, where they do the festivals and stuff during the warmer weather, but our warmer weather is like, upwards of 90 degrees and crazy humidity, and things just bake in the sun all day, and it just makes me want to gag just thinking about it. Like, I just, oh,
No. No, thank you. No, thank you.
not at all.
I've got a whole slew more. Should I just keep going? Like, do you want me to just keep?
You just keep going, and if we get to like a point with the time, whatever, then we will schedule a second episode, 'cause I'm all about all the
Rad.
stories. So
Okay, great. Great. And so I didn't mention Hilltop. So Hilltop was in Richmond, which was just about the two towns down from where I grew up, and it's also about 40 miles from San Francisco, just to put it all in reference. Moving down towards southern part of the Bay Area a little bit, the USS Hornet is a famous World War II ship that's decommissioned now as a museum and is docked in Alameda. And I've been there a couple of times. Really famous for being the ship that rescued the Apollo 11 and Apollo 12 missions from the sea, had lots of combat, saw lots of combat in World War II, lots of activity. So there's a lot of legends about different ghosts that inhabit the USS Hornet. One of them's called the Dress White Ghost, which is an officer who's seen pretty much all over the ship in his full whites, his formal wear. He's seen, I think, in the galley, he's seen in, the aft area, he's seen in all different parts of the ship. A lot of folks also report hearing a lot of chatter, a lot of men moving around. It feels like it's like a residual haunting there, where there's still the impressions of everything that happened on that ship. People have seen ghosts in, and in the medical bay area. They've taken pictures and seen wisps showing up on the photographs. My husband and I went years and years ago, and it's just it's a great historical, thing to ch go check out if you're in the Bay Area. But B, it's chock full of so much history. We felt some things there, but what was really odd, I've never had this experience before, we smelled some stuff. We had like phantom smells. So as we were going from the top of the deck down to the bottom, we smelled like we were in a locker room, like the stinky, gross sock smell kind of thing. And that, a lot of sweaty body odor kind of smell. And we both smelled it, which was kind of unique. And it followed us around the ship for a little while. It didn't just stay in one area. We're like looking around like, all right, who's the stinky person around?
Right.
There was nobody
shower?
Around us. We didn't shower today. But it literally felt like we had this like phantom cloud of smell follow us from room to room for, I don't know, like 5 or 10 minutes or so, but long enough for us to say, okay, that's not a space. It's not, you know, this particular area. There's something to this.
Yeah.
And I remember hearing too, in like the mess hall, almost like plates were being, you know, forks and plates were being, you know, eaten off of, and a lot of chatter, a lot of noise. And a lot of people report that kind of similar energy as well. It just feels dense. It feels like there's just a lot of activity there that never kind of dissipated, but it doesn't feel like a conscious haunting to me. It feels more like, again, residual, like things just kind of getting replayed over and over and over again, like a record player. So that is the USS Hornet.
That's awesome.
In Alameda,
That's
California.
Cool that it's another one where it was like multiple people experiencing it, and it wasn't just you going, man, what is that?
What
That's
is that? I'm
gross.
Like checking myself, like, what is that smell?
That panic.
Super gross.
Oh my gosh, is there any way possible that's me?
Right? No.
That struggle
no.
is always real. Going to the
that's
gym
true.
And everything. I'm just like, oh man, please tell me it was the person that just walked past me.
Yeah. Yeah. Nothing scarier than a stanky ghost smell. moving right along down the 80, we come down to Toys R Us in San Jose, or it's actually technically Sunnyvale, California. So that's about, let's say, like an hour south of San Francisco along the peninsula. And this area was made famous in the 70s and 80s because I think That's Incredible, the TV show at the time, did a whole episode on it. And the local medium, Sylvia Brown, did a seance there. But what happened at the Toys R Us was toys would fly off the handle or fly out off of the shelves into the aisles at like the different employees. Lights would go on and off. They'd hear giggling, like a little kid was giggling, even though it wasn't any of the dolls. It wasn't a toy. And then the faucets would go on and off quite a bit. And so Sylvia Brown did a seance there and came up with all this stuff that was not factually accurate, and they couldn't find any proof of it historically. But what they did find was that there were a lot of deaths on the land prior to, obviously, the shopping mall going there. It was a farm owned by a pretty prominent family at the time, the Murphy family, and there's a lot of tragic deaths, as there were, you know, in the 1800s.
Oh yeah.
You know, farm accidents and people just dying of natural causes and stuff. And so the theory is one of those deaths is what's haunting the Toys R Us, which is now, I believe, an REI. So the ghost can instead, you know, push tents off the shelves now versus toys.
I wonder at what point.
Apparently, it's still haunted.
I wonder at what point they have to pay you for a hostile work environment when you've got things flying off the shelves at you.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Like, I'm going to have to go on disability because, yeah, hazard pay. That's exactly right. Exactly right. This Barbie hit me in the head. I'm not working here anymore.
Right.
Yes.
How do you file that workers' comp claim when something happens? I can't even imagine.
Just put in,
work.
Right? Other miscellaneous.
Right.
So that is Sunnyvale. Moving further south and west, we come upon the Brookdale Lodge, which is in the Santa Cruz Mountains.
Why does that sound familiar?
Brookdale Lodge was it was pretty famous because a lot of celebrities would go visit it. It's beautiful. It's nestled, like I said, in the Santa Cruz Mountains. It's pretty remote. That, you know, Marilyn Monroe visited there. James Dean, President Hoover was there. So there's a lot of it's well known for being like a kind of a celebrity hotspot. I think because it was so remote, but also because it was so pretty. What's unique about this lodge is that they have the only like structure that's built over a running brook. There's literally a brook inside the building that they would have, you know, the restaurant would be around. It's really pretty. It's a little run down now, but back in the heyday, it was pretty gorgeous.
That's awesome.
They also had this pool area where they would have women dress up in mermaid suits. They called it the mermaid room, and they would go in and do mermaid shows, and you could see them underwater as mermaids. It was pretty fun. So there are supposedly two major ghosts that haunt the Brookdale Lodge. One of the previous owners of the lodge, their daughter slipped and fell on the rocks and drowned in that brook that's in the middle of the building. And so her little ghost is seen quite a bit in and around the area. One of the stories is one of the workers' sons was there running around, and he befriended this little blonde girl. He was, you know, having fun and talking and sharing stories and playing hide and seek. And as when it was time for him to go, he went up and hugged the little girl to say goodbye. And when he was done hugging her, there wasn't anything in his arms. And it freaked him out so much that, yeah, as an adult now, he swears he'll never go back to the Brookdale Lodge.
Oof.
That's one story. Yeah. The second story was another drowning in the pool, in the mermaid pool area. And supposedly there's a, I couldn't remember if it was a woman or a little girl, but a female ghost is supposed to haunt that particular area as well. And you can hear splashes, you can hear voices. When we went there, it felt really kind of dark and kind of oppressive, a little claustrophobic. Despite it being really pretty, it just felt wrong in some way. Like it just, something wasn't right in that location.
Oof. That's hard. Like kids terrify me anyways. Like I love kids. They're great, but they are terrifying. So
Most kids are, yes.
excuse me. Yeah, that just ugh. And that's such a strange combination. Like having her, you know, because there aren't that many buildings that actually have, you know, running water through them to slip and fall and drown in water, but be inside is just oof. That is like a
Yeah, and it's
horrible, perfect storm.
really shallow water too. It's only like, you know, maybe a foot or two deep. It's really not that big. And so it makes it even more terrifying. And there's a lot of ghost theories about, you know, running water being a good conduit for ghost type energy. And so I'm not surprised that there's been, you know, hauntings around that area. Same with, you know, the USS Hornet being in water. And there's a lot of places that are haunted that are in and around running water. So there might be some truth to that.
That would make sense. I'm trying to remember the name of the one in Long Beach. Mary.
Queen Mary.
Yes.
The Queen
That's
Mary.
another one that I was really sad that I didn't get to. Of course, I wasn't like a huge horror fan when I lived out there. But I still like to do like haunted houses and stuff around Halloween. And I was really sad that I missed doing a tour out there when Halloween rolled around.
So I've been there. I think I've been to every haunted place in California. And
Oh, that's awesome.
the Queen Mary, we did have, and I know that's Southern California, but we did have a pretty unique experience there. We went on a ghost hunting kind of tour, I think, and with a famous medium that I can't remember his name off the top of my head. And we literally did, we went into the hole, you know, the very depths, bowels of the ship, and the ship's huge. And we did hear a little girl talking to us audibly. And we couldn't tell if it was like made up, like did someone put a speaker in there and we're just like pulling our legs, or was that real? But it was, we did hear someone answer the medium. The medium was like, talk to me, speak to me. And we did hear like some voice respond. So that was pretty cool.
Oof. Yeah, I've seen a couple episodes like Ghost Hunters when they were out there and things like that. Like it's always exciting to have those places within reach to be able to go and look
Yeah,
yourself too.
that's right. That's
Yeah.
awesome. There's a lot of history here in California. We don't have the same history as the East Coast, obviously, but it's just as old. The Native Indigenous folks that lived in where I grew up in Pinole, they were there for 5,000 years before the Spanish came. A lot of legends about that as well, but that might be another episode.
Yeah, that's one thing that the more I talk to people, like the episode I just had come out last week with Brenda Tolian, she was in an area of Colorado where, there's a larger population of, indigenous native people. And I definitely kind of want to start asking around to try and have them on the show, because I feel like we just all think of America being like such a new thing, because like on paper it is, but there's so much there that I feel like has kind of gotten trampled on and washed away, and we just don't hear about it. So that would definitely, I feel like, be an awesome conversation.
That sounds great. I would love to hear that. So, yes, please do that.
I will that is I'll have to add that to my list,
Yeah,
'cause it's, the more I hear like in different regions and stuff, I'm like, man, like it would be great to be able to talk to somebody about, their history and their family's history, and just to see what gets passed along in that sense. And
it would be important to record that. Yeah, I would
yeah.
agree. All right, so keep moving south. Now we're going on the PCH. We're moving down
Yeah.
towards Half Moon Bay, which is now about an hour and a half south of San Francisco, to a little place called the Moss Beach Distillery. It's right on the Pacific coast, so it's on a cliff overlooking the beautiful coast. In the 1920s, it was known as a speakeasy called Frank's Place. And this is where all the folks from San Francisco would go to drink, because the police wouldn't go there because it was so remote. And one of the legends of Frank's Place, now the Moss Beach Distillery, was that a beautiful woman who wore these stunning blue dresses, fell in love with the piano player of Frank's Place. Only problem was she was married to someone other than the piano player. When her husband, small detail,
Right.
little wrinkle. When her husband found out, he became enraged and killed her and maimed the piano player. And so the legend goes that on a foggy, cold, moonlit night, you can see this woman in blue, stunning woman, overlooking the cliffs of the Moss Beach Distillery on the Pacific Coast. I've been there a couple of times. I felt really creepy down in the bathroom where they said that she's supposed to hang out. I had this like air kind of blown at me, and I saw this weird like hologram thing in the mirror, and then I realized they actually put in false ghost experiences in the Moss Beach Distillery. So they literally have, I
Oh.
know, I felt like a chump. I'm like, I
Oh.
fell for it, man. You guys tricked me.
Oh.
They have like this, I know, wah. They have like machine that blows air in the bathroom, and then this like holographic image that shows up in the mirror if you look at it a certain way. And then they've got lights in the bar that kind of purposefully dangle when you, I guess, the bartender hits a button or something. So it's kind of
Oh
a
yeah.
letdown. However, it's still a beautiful place, and the food is amazing. And so if you're ever in, the Bay Area down by Half Moon Bay, you got to check out Moss Beach Distillery.
That does sound interesting. I know it's gorgeous there along the cliffs too, anyways. But, oh man, that would be such a letdown. Like, have these experiences and then be like, oh, wait, what?
Yeah. Aw, wah wah. I wanted to be terrified. Now I just feel like a chump.
I know. Now, is that something that they kind of in the fine print, like on their website? sort of thing, or is it like word of mouth, like you find out that they've got that going on?
Well, the hologram in the bathroom is pretty obvious. Like, it doesn't look anything like a ghost. It literally looks like a hologram, you know, like someone's face is there, and like, come on, no.
No.
But no, there's been there's been TV shows that talk about them debunking it. So the reason they have it, apparently, they did have a lot of very legit hauntings. So people, it became a tourist destination for ghost hunter type folks like myself, who like to experience those kinds of things. But the owners wanted to have it be more of a sure thing or more regular occurrence for their many tourists that traveled there. And so they worked with, you know, a couple of folks to create these, like, you know, experiences to kind of make you feel like you are immersed in an actual experience.
Oh, see, and that's tough because then I feel like, the people that do have actual experiences there, they're going to be questioning, is this something that I actually experienced, or, is this part of the setup? That's disgusting.
Who knows?
Right.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan. I was disappointed, but you know,
Yeah,
it's local legend, so I wanted to bring it up because it's a pretty famous local
absolutely.
legend around here. The other thing, so closer now, we're moving closer down to where I am, and I'm gonna save the best for last. So two more to go. So I live in the Monterey County area, which is Central California. And this is the oldest city in California. Lots of history, lots of mayhem. One of the missions here, the Carmel Mission, is supposedly haunted, famously so, by the founder, Junipero Serra, as well as some of the indigenous people that he tortured and enslaved and got slave labor out of, at the time. So very complicated, torturous, horrific history that we have here in the California missions. And so with all of that, you know, hardship, of course there's going to be, you know, hauntings and things. So specifically at the Carmel mission, there's supposed to be floating candles that they see in the church itself. And you know, legend is it's Junipero Serra trying to do a midnight mass or something. Whoever the ghost is, we don't know, but there's supposedly, like I said, the candles that kind of move on their own throughout the church. There's also the legend of a headless horseman on a white horse that's supposed to patrol the area around the Carmel Mission. Don't know who that's supposed to be or where that came from, but who doesn't love a headless horse myth in your own backyard when you're in California and
No
not in Sleepy
kidding.
Hollow in New York?
Right. Equal opportunity headless people.
That's right. That's right. And we know we don't, like I said, we don't have a lot of cryptids, but here in the Monterey Bay Area, we've got a lot of UFO sightings. So there's a couple of movies made. One, it's a documentary, and it's a trip, regardless if you believe in UFO or not. This guy's story is just, you gotta watch it. It's kind of like a one of those like train wrecks, but you can't stop
Can't
looking.
look
It's that kind of bad good, you
away.
know what I mean? Can't look away, can't look away. And it's called The Curse of the Man Who Sees UFOs. And that's literally in, you know, my backyard. It's filmed where I live. And it's he's got a way of like calling UFOs and getting them to respond and seeing these lights in the sky flash. I haven't experienced it myself personally. But one of these nights, if I'm brave enough, I might go out and try.
Yeah. Though aliens are one of those things that get me every time, without question. And I have officially added that to my list because I will watch anything alien. So, and I know they
Yeah,
hear,
it's good. It's
was
good.
it like the
It's
Battle of
trippy
Los
and it's weird.
Angeles that they have like a lot of stuff along the coastline in California where and they see them like coming out of the water and
Yes. USOs, unidentified submerged objects. Yes. We're big on that here on the California coast. A lot of that.
all the things, all of them.
All the things. All the things. All the things. Last but not least, drum roll, please. The Winchester Mystery House of San Jose,
Yes.
California.
So excited.
So for those of you who don't know, which is probably like none of you, this is a very kind of iconic historic location in California. And it's in San Jose, which is about an hour south of San Francisco. And it was built by a woman named Sarah Winchester, who is the lone heiress to the Winchester rifle fortune. She was originally in the East Coast. She lost a daughter and her husband back to back, and her daughter was very, very young, an infant. And this was right around the time in the turn of the century when the spiritualist movement was really kicking up steam, and it was really popular on the East Coast, especially right after World War I, because a lot of folks wanted to kind of reach out to their dead loved ones that were killed in the war. And so Sarah Winchester, being, someone, a grieving widow and a grieving mother, sought out a lot of spiritualists to help her connect with her lost loved ones. In that, she was told that there was a curse put on her family because of the Winchester rifle being the cause of so many deaths, including a lot of indigenous people, because that's how they won the West, accordingly, because of the Winchester repeating rifle. And so everybody in her family would be cursed. So that what they told her to avoid that is, number one, move to the West, as west as you can, which you can't get more west than San Jose, just about, and start building a home for these spirits. And so she had these gigantic plans and built this enormous, I can't even call it a mansion. It's more of like a, I don't even know, like a campus, really, that was 24,000 square feet. And she just kept building because the ghosts needed places to go. And she also built things to trick them into getting them stuck into different parts of the building. A lot of different legends say different things about this, but she would go every night. There was a room that she had created, which was called the seance room. And she'd go up there with the planchette and have the ghost kind of draw the new plans for the next day or the next week or whatever it was. And so there's always constant building going on 24/7. Like, these guys didn't check out at 5 p.m. They literally worked midnight, 2 a.m., 3 a.m. building this house that she was getting channeled information from the spirits on how to build it. The thinking being, if she kept building, the spirits would never be able to find her. They would never be able to rest, and they have enough places to kind of go check out where she could kind of be hidden, but also it would satiate the restless ghost needs to, I don't know, haunt things. In the house itself, there's all of these really strange rooms where, stairs lead up to nowhere. Windows that don't face anything outside. They face like internally into the house. It's kind of weird. Doors that the famous door that leads to nowhere. A lot of this was just really just bad construction. Like, her plans would change. And so once there was supposed to be a window overlooking the garden, but now there's another part of the house there. A lot of it is just, the because of the constant construction and the house expanding. But some of the theories are, again, because she wanted to confuse the spirits and kind of trap them in different parts of the house to kind of save her from whatever curse was she believed that was put upon her.
And if I remember correctly, this is also where Rose Red came from for Stephen King fans. And that was one of my favorite movies for like the longest time, even with as long as it is, because I had it when it was on two DVDs and not on the same DVD. But yeah, I always loved that movie and just
That's
the whole
right.
concept of, the kind of essentially what becomes like a whole, an entire restless house because there's just so much going on.
Yeah, agreed. And there's supposedly some ghosts that haunt there. So I want to say Clive was his name, but I could remember that wrong. One of the workers that was there a long time, very loyal to the Mrs. Winchester, is supposed to be around haunting it. checking it out, making sure he's still kind of like on duty as caretaker for the house. Some folks also report seeing Sarah's ghost as well. Sarah was a really tiny in stature. She was, I think, less than 4 foot 10. And so she had different things in the house built for her. So like stairs were really long and narrow. So you'd have to go this winding path because her knees were bad, et cetera, et cetera. And so they would see, like a little shadow kind of going through these stairs, where she would inhabit, the area where she'd travel most in the house. There's also like a famous thing about the number 13. Like there's 13, I'm gonna get this wrong, but like 13 bathrooms and 13, specific, ice or glass structures. And she had a thing with everything had to be 13. So 13 is all over the construction of the house.
And again, I'm trying to put together like bits and pieces, but there were a lot of deaths during construction and stuff too, weren't there?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And the early 1906 earthquake, I think it was 1903, 1906 earthquake demolished like a good, quarter, if not more, of the construction. She had to start over. And I can't remember, but I think there might have been deaths as a result from the earthquake as well.
Oh, that wouldn't surprise me at all. And you said you've been there?
Several times.
Oh, I'm so jealous. So
Yeah.
jealous.
I've been there at night and I've gone into the seance room before I knew what the seance room was. And again, Sarah never let anybody in that room. It's a tiny room. It's blue with white walls. There's only, like one way in and like three ways to get out. There's some weird fact about that I'm not going to be able to remember. But when I went there, I didn't know we were going there. I was just looking down on my feet, making sure I didn't trip on anything because there's just kind of weird stuff everywhere. And as I got into that room, I got so dizzy. I thought I was going to pass out. Like the walls were spinning. That's not like me. Like that's not normal. I don't just have like dizzy spells. And so when I looked up, I'm like, oh, we're in the seance room. No wonder. Because she had, literally every midnight, she would do seances and talk to spirits, which, if you believe in that stuff, would create a lot of energy in that room. And folks that are sensitive, like myself, would feel that as sometimes spinning or being dizzy.
Oh, and especially every single night for years and years, like that's intense.
Yeah. Decades. Yeah. Yeah.
Oof.
Crazy. It's a crazy place. Crazy place. Well worth the visit. And it's gorgeous. Like there's part of it that is just stunningly beautiful to visit.
And they do like Halloween specific stuff too, like once that rolls around, don't they?
Yeah. They'll do flashlight tours on every Friday the 13th. They'll do, a lot of stuff from October, November. They'll do night tours. Yeah. They are also big promoters of the kind of haunted history of Winchester Mystery House. Yeah.
Oh man, the flashlights would be terrifying because there's always going to be one that, whether it's external influence or not, there's always going to be one that's dysfunctional and it's going to have you questioning everything. And I'm such a chicken with that stuff. Like I can just imagine. And to be lost in a
Love it.
house like that, where everything is just so off kilter, anyways, I would think that'd be so disconcerting.
Yeah. And it's easy once you visit, it's very, very easy to see how you could be lost for hours and hours and hours in that place. And no one, you could yell and no one would hear you.
Oof. I've actually read a
Yeah.
couple of good, but I can't remember the name of the one off the top of my head. But the idea of being lost in an unfamiliar house, that's especially something that you said, like 26,000 square feet. Like, oh,
24,000, yeah.
24. Yeah, that's so
Yeah.
much ground to cover when you don't know where you're going.
Yeah. I mean, and the cost of building it, so like, taking into account today's terms, it would have cost $71 million to build what she built at that time. So she had some money. But the good thing about Sarah Winchester is she paid her staff really well. Everyone got treated well, good benefits, good bonuses. Like, they, even though they knew she was crazy, they were happy to build 24/7 because she paid them to do it. She paid them really well.
Wow. And that alone for that time frame in general is bizarre on it all by itself, because it's not very often that you hear stories about that from those days.
Right, right.
Now, is there any part of that house that's currently being lived in, do you know?
No, it's 100% time museum.
Okay.
And tourist attraction. Yeah.
I can't say as I'd be interested in living there myself. Family or not.
Yeah. No.
No, it's okay.
No. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. Pass. I'll take a hard pass on that one too, thanks.
Yeah, right. I don't want this to be what I have to come home to every day.
Right.
At that point, you're probably not commuting back and forth to work with that kind of money, but still, you never know.
Right. So that's my last, you know, Bay Area, Central California story.
That's awesome. So what have been like some of the craziest experiences that you've had doing some of these tours? Not even necessarily there, but just overall, honest, in general.
Yeah. So in general, well, how much time do you have? Because I've gone all over the world to haunted places, and I can tell you stuff about, what? You know, Mary King's Close in Scotland. I can tell you about the Whaley House in San Diego, California. Some weird stuff happened there. This place in Canada I visited, in British Columbia. Lots of places in New York. So let's see. One of the things I can share, I was in a hotel in Canada by myself. And didn't know the hotel was haunted. I was there for something else. Found out later it was haunted. And I hear this like sliding sound on the desk where the TV is. And I'm, of course, the only one in the room. Mm. And then I hear a plop. I hear a slide and then a plop. And I look up and my hat is on the floor, in the middle of the floor. And I had put it way back on the shelf. There's no wind, no doors open, no air conditioning on, nothing. And then I could hear like this footstep in the room. And I'm like, I'm trying to get some sleep. You guys, like, leave me alone. Like, this isn't cool. I'm not into this whole haunting my hotel room when I'm by myself. Like, just beat it. But I could feel like something else was in the room with me. And that was pretty terrifying at the time.
Ooh. I want to say I recorded with her forever ago. She lives in San Diego. Her episode is not, I think hers comes out next week. Casey Griffant. Oh my gosh. Now I can't remember. It's been so long, but she talked a little bit about the Whaley House when she came on.
Yeah.
So it'll be a good refresher when I go through and listen to that to edit it for next week. That's the only problem with the way I record kind of in batches, so that it frees up time for a little while and I'm not constantly scrambling to record and everything. Like, sometimes it's a surprise even to me to go back and listen to some of these episodes again, to edit them, to get them out. And I'm like, oh yeah, we did talk about that. Yeah, that was a good conversation.
Yeah, the Whaley House, I do have a really specific thing that happened to me there. So there's the ghost that's supposed to haunt that. There's many, but one of them is called Yankee Jim, who was hung with the gallows that is used in the front room. So the home was built over the gallows, which tells you a lot right there. And he was hung in the gallows just for my purpose. Totally fine. Normal. Decoration.
Yeah.
He was hung for just like stealing a boat. So his crime, his punishment did not fit the crime. And so he's rumored to haunt the area and has been a restless spirit ever since. So we were going, it was daytime, we were going in there for a tour, and it's supposedly one of the, you know, most haunted places according to Library of Congress or some, you know, governing body that measures that sort of thing. And
the government does.
the government does, you know. And there's a group of tourists ahead of us, and I could hear them kind of complaining, like, come on, do something, turn a light on or turn a light off, like kind of egging on the ghost or something. And this little voice, not a little voice, a big voice by my head, and a male voice said, ghosts don't do parlor tricks. And I swear, goosebumps up and down my body. I started laughing because I thought it was hysterical, but also terrified me at the same time. It was just like perfectly timed. I'm like, that's Yankee Jim. Yankee Jim came to say, ghosts don't do parlor tricks.
If I'm gonna be a ghost, that right there is the kind of ghost I'm gonna be. Right.
Sassy. I want my ghost sassy.
Like,
Oh,
I'm sorry, I'm not here for your amusement.
yeah, right.
Oh, yeah, that
Exactly.
would. God, the hair on my
Right.
arms is standing up now.
Nice. My job here is done.
That's right. Yeah, I definitely need to get out a little more around here, especially being in the South and Civil War history and all that good stuff. I know there's got to be a ton. But I don't know anybody like in my immediate vicinity who is like born and raised horror fan, knows all the little local things. So I'm still on the hunt for that. But then on the other hand, I'm like,
Gotta get out there. Maybe put.
do I want to know?
Yeah. Right. Be
Little
careful
different
what
when
you
a
ask
couple
for.
roads down. Yeah, exactly.
Wait, you mean my house is on Indian burial ground? Wait, this is where a Civil War battle took place? Wait, maybe I didn't want to know that.
I've seen all of those movies and they end horribly.
Horribly. They do not end well.
There is one of my friends, she and her brother run their own podcast and they do like conspiracy theories and hauntings and stuff like that. And she did like a little spin-off of it that we called Night Terrors. And we would talk about like horror movies and stuff like that. And she would have different guests on for it. And one of the episodes she wanted to do was like it was like the most haunted thing from each state. And it was just, one of those random put together lists because they obviously didn't pick like the most well-known ones. But the one that she sent me for Tennessee was one called Skin Tom. And as I'm looking at it, it's a town 15 minutes up the road. And I was like, what?
Oh.
So, and it's, I've,
Still too close.
yeah, I've lived here for 5 years now, and I have not at any point heard any mention of it, but apparently it was one of those lover's lane, don't mess with somebody else's wife kind of quarrels, and he was skinned alive. So I don't know to what extent he like is, I don't know if he's supposed to be like inflicting things on people or if he's just seen muscle and tendon walking around. But yeah, I was like, this is literally up the road from me. Like, that's where, when Journey was going through training, that's where his trainer is. So, like, I'm up there every so often, and I'm like, I don't know how I feel about this.
Can you imagine like seeing, now here's my horror writer self coming forward. You're at night, there's a mist, it's a forest, and you see something glistening in the moonlight, and it's the wet shininess of muscle of
Yeah.
the skinless man walking through.
Not even just a
Yeah,
random
that's just
person,
not.
but and having worked in healthcare, most of my work was with the operating rooms as support staff. So,
Oh,
having
geez.
seen lots of things that the human body goes through during surgery and whatnot, it just no.
There's a story there. I think you need to write that story
I feel
about
like it's gonna
Skinless
happen.
Tom.
I already have like 20 unfinished
Yeah.
stories on my computer. Like, why not? I've had to start
Add
keeping
another.
notes. Ugh, 'cause I get like all the ideas and I'll be super inspired and motivated by it for like a few hours. And then I try to come back to write and I'm like, now where do I want to go with it? And because I edit too, I get used to just going through other people's work. And it's like, it's given me kind of this block when it comes to trying to do my own work. So the struggle is real. But I'd like to at least be able to put together enough short stories to do like a collection or something. That's like my goal for either this year or next year is to take that leap.
You know, one of the things I learned from my favorite author, Neil Gaiman, amazing, love him, everything he does, is his plan. You know, when he gets that way, he sits with his computer and he doesn't allow himself to do anything right. Like if he can't think about if he gets stuck or whatnot, he will just sit there. Like he doesn't check his phone, he doesn't have the internet, he sits there and stares at a blank screen or he writes. And so it's more torturous to sit there and do nothing than it is to try to come up with, you know, what you need to write next. And so for him, it was eliminating any and all other distractions and just getting to it, getting the work done.
Oof. That sounds terrifying all on itself.
Interwebs. How dare you, sir?
That and like this giant baby that's still curled under my desk. Like, he'll come in and wake me up in the middle of the night if he decides he has to go outside. And one of my friends, she and her husband have, well, they just had to have one put to sleep, but they had four dogs. And she's like, oh, she's like, I just closed the dogs out of the room. And I was like, do you have any idea what this dog with his separation anxiety would do if I shut the door and didn't let him in? Like, it would be a million times worse. So he tends to, I've learned the trick when I'm in this room recording is if I bring his bed in here and he can settle down, like, kind of next to me, then usually he's not too bad. But he has like decided it was time for podcast episodes to end. He'll start chasing his tail behind me, and all you can hear is his nails clicking on the floor. And it's just he. So I list him as a co-host because he
So
decides
cute.
that he needs to be very involved with things. So,
Yeah, I think he's a producer. He's
yeah, that's
co-producer of the show. Yeah.
and supervisor and all the important things that, I would be lost without. Which is also like,
Important role. It's an important role.
yes, very much so. And I grew up with animals and stuff. So like you had mentioned at the beginning, like the dog sitting at the bottom of the stairs, like looking up and barking. And he does that with the kitchen. The house that I live in was built in like 1894, something like that. So it, especially for Southern, like that's relatively old living in the city that I'm in. But yeah, we'll be sitting on the couch, and it usually happens when I'm watching a horror movie and he's sound asleep. All of a sudden, like during the most intense scene of the movie, he looks out to the kitchen and just loses his mind. And he'll get up and he'll go tearing out there. And at that point, like I've already lost my mind, because I'm all focused on this movie thinking that he's sound asleep over here. But yeah, he'll just go tearing out there, and then he'll bark for a few minutes, and then he comes back out just looking confused, like he doesn't know what just happened. And I'm like, I don't like that. I don't like it when you do that.
Terrifying. My husband works nights, so I'm home alone a lot, and so I will sit and watch TV again. Same thing, true crime or horror, that's my jam. And
Yes.
so my cat will be sound asleep on my lap, and something will startle him, and he'll look up behind me, and literally his eyes will be trailing. He'll follow something like that's coming down the stairs behind me. Like he's like totally alert, totally ready to pounce. And following something. And I'm like, dude, do not do that to me. I'm home alone. This isn't cool. I'm already freaked out. Like, please do not. He does that like almost every night.
You're like, I'm just gonna need you to ignore everything you see when it's just us home. Just pretend it's
That's
not
right.
there.
That's right. Go back to
Just,
sleep.
yeah,
Yeah.
right.
Yeah.
Don't even open your eyes. If you hear it, don't look. Just mind your business. All
That's right. That's right.
right.
I don't want to
Well,
know. I don't want to know.
so we'll definitely have to plan for a second episode because I need to hear about all these things, all of them.
Sweet.
So in
Sweet.
terms of your work, like what do you have anything that has like come out, well, I say this year, last year, and I saw you have one coming out in April. which at this point will be just a couple months down the line. What you got?
Yeah, thanks. So, a couple of things. I've got a couple of short stories that were in anthologies in 2022. One was an essay called A Girl, Her Dad, and a Cemetery, and Death Garden Revisited, an anthology of stories about people's personal relationships with cemeteries by Lauren Rhodes, who I suggest highly that you also interview about San Francisco myths and folklore. And then I had a short story called Mrs. Claus in the Crystal Lake Shallow Waters Christmas Anthology that just came out earlier in December. And a How to Create the Perfect Pumpkin short story in their Halloween edition as well. I got that. And then what's coming up is, oh, and I just finished my third issue. So I am the creator and writer for a comic book series called Black Cat Chronicles: True Tales of Horror, narrated by a black cat, of course. And so the first issue was on the Greyfriars Cemetery in Scotland, which is horrific and terribly haunted. The second issue was on Alaska's Port Chatham, so a town that just kind of disappears out of nowhere. And then the third issue, which we just finished a few months ago, was Invasion Antarctica. So all the weird, creepy stuff that's happened since kind of World War II and the present with Antarctica. And so that just came out. And then in April, my short story collection is entitled They Hide: Short Stories to Tell in the Dark. And it's kind of my love letter to horror tropes. So I've got horror, witch story, a werewolf story, a vampire story, a clown story, ghost stories, demon is in there.
All the
Lucifer, of
bases.
course, makes the all of them, makes an appearance. And so there's 13 stories in that, and that's coming out from Bridgescape Press in April of 2023.
That's awesome. Yeah, I will definitely. Yeah, you'll have to send me her name and I will definitely reach out to her too. My
Cool.
original goal, I was like, oh, I just want to like get a person from every state. And even knowing like with the traveling I've done and stuff, obviously each state is a huge place and there's a lot of ground to cover. So I'm realizing that I'm gonna have to find some way to keep track. Like I want to find like a big map and like print it out and just start like shading in like regions from where I've talked to people so that I can keep better track somehow of what I'm still looking for. And but it's I love it. Like it's just been so awesome talking to everybody and getting to hear all these little bits and pieces that the little things that some of the bigger things of course people are gonna have heard about. But I love the little stuff that just kind of skates under the radar when it comes to mainstream stuff. So all about that.
Local legends. In California, like we said in the beginning, it's like three states. So
Oh,
you
yeah.
could very easily have multiple people talk about California stories and never overlap.
Oh, yeah, not at all. It's just I'm really surprised that they haven't split yet, to be honest. Like it's there's
They
so
tried every so yeah.
it's crazy. It's like I mean, growing up in New York, I was like way upstate, like 7 hours from the city. I only ever went to the city once, and it is like culture shock. It's such, I had 46 people in my graduating class. So I grew up in a very tiny rural area. And, of course, you tell people you're from New York, and the first thing is like, oh, I love Manhattan and I love Brooklyn. And I'm like, but I don't know. That's not what I meant. But.
It's a totally different beast. And until you drive up New York, you don't have any sense of how vast and big the state is and
Yeah.
how different it is. Like Sleepy Hollow, New York is nothing like Manhattan.
Yeah, no, not at all. And I where I grew up was like 2 hours south of Rochester, kind of same-ish distance from Buffalo. We were like 15 minutes from Pennsylvania. So, it's
Wow.
just tiny little tucked away dairy farms everywhere. And, it's just totally different. I mean, of course it's like half the size of California, but yeah, it's strange sometimes that I'm like, maybe we should just like take a break and like erase some lines and divvy things up again. Like, let's just split them up.
Do over with the states.
Yes,
Let's redraw those.
that would be phenomenal.
Yes.
I mean, a quick 15 minutes, you know, it just we got this. It'd be fine. What could go wrong?
Easy, easy.
You're fine.
That's right.
All right. Well, I don't know if he'll actually go outside, but he's whining looking out the window. So we're gonna see how this goes. But yeah, we will absolutely schedule a second episode. And of course, I'll link all your stuff when this comes out, and I'll give you a heads up when it's gonna come out. And yeah, we'll definitely have to sort that out. 'Cause it sounds like we have to talk to true crime now too, because I love all that stuff. So,
Oh,
all the things.
and just a total tangent, like the Bay Area is serial killer capital of the world. Like
Oh,
we've got the
absolutely.
Zodiac, we've got the Night Stalker, we've got Charles Manson, we've got Golden
Golden
State Killer.
State.
Like
Yeah.
I could talk for hours about all those.
It's funny because I feel like just from different run-ins that I've had, there are some horror fans that equally love true crime. There are some that are like absolutely terrified by true crime, which I mean, some of it kind of makes me nervous, but you know, growing up, I couldn't watch, well, I say growing up, but up until like last year, I couldn't really watch horror movies by myself. But I will fall asleep watching episodes of Murder and Mayhem
Oh
and
yeah, easy.
everything else. Like I had no problems with that. So it's always funny to me to see, you know, how horror people feel about true crime, because it's usually a love or hate division between the two.
I'm dying love camp.
You what? Sorry, you cut out.
I'm definitely in the love camp.
Oh, I just with cults and everything else, I'm just like,
Oh,
how could you
yes.
not? All the psychology, all of it. It's
Bring all of that to me. All of those documentaries, all the Netflixes of the
yes.
world,
Oh,
cults,
fantastic.
occult, all of it. Yes, please. That's my jam.
Oh, we have so many
That is
things
my
to
jam.
talk about
On the third episode, we talk
Yeah,
about
no
cults.
kidding. In the spin-off series, because we have completely derailed everything. Oh, that's
Yes.
fantastic. Yeah, so definitely thank you again for coming on. It was really cool to hear about places that I've seen and have driven past, and oh yeah, we definitely have a plenty to discuss for another episode. So I am, oh my goodness.
Oh, my
But
pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
yeah,
It's been really
absolutely.
fun.
We will. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I think, who was it I was talking to? I think it was Robert Harold, maybe. I was like, you know, I'm waiting for that person to just be an asshole and be like, no, this was terrible at the end of an episode and be like, fine, be that way. Your episode's 5 minutes. All you get.
I'm mixing it. It goes into the trash folder. No, do
Right,
over.
delete. Yes, so I'm so bad at these. Yeah, we'll definitely hash out another one. So you enjoy
Sounds
the
good.
rest of your day, and we will definitely
You
talk to
too.
you again.
Sounds good. Thanks, Tasha.
Awesome, thank you. Bye.
Bye.